This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Welcome, coaches, to the Talking Split Podcast. I am Rob Calder from Basketball Victoria, and I will introduce our guests on the podcast in a second. Just a reminder to everyone, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to the Talking Split Podcast, where, of course, you can leave a rating and review, 5 stars only. Don't be giving us any of this one-star rubbish. Definitely 5-star reviews for these. And you are able to also follow along with the handle Talking at Talking Split on Twitter and Instagram. So this is a podcast on a Sunday afternoon, which is a little bit rare for us to jump into this, but you'll find out why in a second. So what we are discussing today is the Marty Hansen Scholarship Program, which has been running over the past few months in collaboration with FIBA and Basketball Victoria. So for those of you that may not be aware, it's named after a former head coach in the Victoria Country Pathway, Marty Hansen, who passed away in 2016. Marty was just involved in everything in basketball. He was a phenomenal coach, obviously. Did a lot of work in that Vic Country space as their high-performance coach and winning their first gold medal. Strongly involved in development of athletes and coaches across all levels of the basketball community. Was very dedicated to really just growing the game overall, and did a lot of work, not just in Australia, but also out in the regions working for FIBA as well. So This was something that was really well put together by Basketball Victoria and FIBA, which it's fantastic to be able to honour the name Marty Hansen, and you know, I'm even forgetting the fact that he was the former president of McKinnon Basketball. So he really did give in at all levels, and he's one of those people as well that you would have to go a very long way to find someone that didn't have a great Marty story of him just being a great person and helping out across the board. So it is fantastic to have something like this. This is part of the FIBA global strategy of supporting and empowering national federations through boosting grassroots programs, enabling access to coaching development across the region. So when this first got advertised, we had roughly 40 applicants from countries such as Fiji, Kiribati, New Caledonia, Northern Mariana Islands, Palau, Papua New Guinea, Samoa, Solomon Islands, Tahiti, and Tonga, who all took part in the sessions, which focused on multiple things across the whole basketball landscape. So as I did mention, we do have two additional people here who are a little bit weary-eyed because it has been a long 2 weeks for the both of them. But we have the two successful applicants from the Marty Hansen Scholarship who went through the online training sessions, jumped into a whole lot of assessment pieces as well. But I'd like to welcome from Tonga, Siali. Welcome, Tonga. Welcome, Tonga. Welcome, Siali.
Yeah, thank you very much, Robert. I'll leave everyone out there. Thank you very much for having us.
No worries. And also Marlene from the Northern Mariana Islands. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having us. Enjoy our time out here and I've learned a lot of stuff.
Yeah, awesome. So we'll unpack a little bit of what you guys have gone through over the past, well, months if you count the online training sessions. So it's so Siali, we'll start with you. Do you want to give us a little bit of your background in basketball, both as a player, as a coach, and where you've come from, I suppose? Obviously, you represent Tonga in basketball, but you lived in Fiji and you've had a wealth of experience all over the place as well.
Yeah, no, we'll do my best. So I guess started playing basketball around 10, 11 years old. In Fiji, thanks to a great coach and a group of family and kids that got us into the game and kind of instilled in us that love for the game. And then I lived in New Caledonia in the South Pacific for a bit, which is a French-speaking territory, and played for about 6 years there, sort of at the club level. Or in between that was at, went to primary school in Tonga, but unfortunately there wasn't a whole lot of basketball going on there at the time. So it was mainly sort of just barefoot pickup, we'll call it. Managed to sort of later on play at the university level in England and in France. And then after having spent quite a while in London, the last 11 years, returned to home, which is Fiji, with a missus and two kids, and looking to kind of finish my playing career, if one can even call it such, at the same kind of club or at the same place where I started about 30 years ago. So playing for Tonga currently, and just been really blessed, I think, to have been able to fall in love with the game and had some great coaches over the years. So I've always felt like Coaching was the next logical step for me, and a great way to try and give back to a game and a community that has, you know, given me a lot of love over the years, and been able to make friends all over the world. So it's kind of a small way of trying to give back to the game that, yeah, I've been very grateful to fall in love with for all these years. Yep. Thank you.
Awesome. Marlene, what about you? What's your background with the sport?
So I started playing around elementary, maybe like fifth grade. I was just all like pick up basketball and it was all for fun and everything. And then I went all the way up to high school playing, I would say probably competitive basketball, started high school level. And then I faded away from the sport for a couple years right after graduating. And grateful enough to have a coach from one of my clubs. He reached out to me and he was asking if I wanted to help him build the girls program under his club. And sure enough, I was not ready. I told him, no, I don't want to coach. I want to play. And he's like, okay, fine. So what he did is he basically mentored me as a player coach. And then I took on the role on just being a player for a bit, you know, leading the girls, our team on the court and helping out. And then little by little, you know, I started to grow the love of coaching. And I got fortunate enough to be selected for another FIBA program, which was the Rising Coaches. And that really inspired me to become a coach and grow my love to start coaching. Again, still wasn't confident enough on myself. And I said, I don't think I'm able to coach yet. But I got selected to help coach the U15 back home. And that basically started 2 years ago. And from now, that experience really opened my mindset around coaching and moving forward with it. So I really enjoyed my experience as a coach. And, you know, it's all about the impact that you can do on and off the court, building that network, that connection. And again, you know, like what Siali said, it's giving back to the sport that you love. You know, when no one was there, it was the sport that was there, you know. So it was amazing. My background is fairly new because I just recently started coaching. But yeah, I love the sport and I'm ready to give back to it.
Yeah, awesome. So what does basketball look like where you're from? Like, so you're based in Saipan. What does it actually look like at the grassroots level all the way through?
So basketball, it's a famous sport with the boys side, right? We're trying to grow the women's program right now. I mean, basically the girls, there's a lot of kids who are interested in playing. However, it's just they don't have much sessions for them to reach out and, you know, try to training sessions where to grow the interest. So right now, you know, we're the federation that I'm part of. We're working on trying to build that interest with the youth. And the boys side is not a problem. We have tons of players we could pull out left and right. But it's the girls that when I do go back home, that's one thing I want to focus on. Basketball is slowly but surely growing at a steady pace that we want it. And we're hoping that it stays that way.
Awesome. What about UCL? So you're based in Fiji, but you're obviously from Tonga, so you can probably speak to both a little bit. What's it look like?
Yeah, well, we'll try. In Fiji, and having said that, I've only just kind of recently returned. It's almost a year now, so I haven't, you know, seen a lot, but I've seen a bit. At least we'll speak to, you know, what I've seen so far. And it's incredible. I think the contrast between, like, when I left 11 years ago and when I returned to Fiji now, like what the incredible job that, you know, Fiji basketball has done to kind of encourage youth to get involved in the sport, you know, through their Bulla Hoops programs, their after school programs, they're in schools as well, and looking to sort of expand to different areas also in the country, to the different schools, as well as having you know, quarterly tournaments for different age groups and 3x3 tournaments as well. So 3x3 has kind of come on the scene relatively recently. So I think there's definitely been that expansion. I mean, having said that, it is still obviously smaller numbers, you know, both in Fiji and Tonga. It's rugby that, you know, is the main sport. So sort of basketball often is a has smaller numbers because of that, but it has a very, I would say, a small but very kind of growing and tight-knit community, which I think is wonderful, having seen it at least in New Caledonia and Fiji and Tonga. You kind of have, it's basically like a family, I think. So, you know, that's it's such a nice community. And in Tonga itself, like I mentioned, when I was in primary school, there wasn't a whole lot going on. It was mainly pickup. But sort of in, at least to my knowledge, sort of in recent times, like since we had a team that went to a FIBA qualifying tournament in Samoa, a men's team, which I was very lucky to be part of. And that was, I think, the first tournament we'd been to in about 18 years. So from that, we're trying to basically help the players that were there help grow the game in Tonga, help encourage young kids to look to it as, you know, as an option, both in the schools and also in 3x3. We have 3x3 tournaments that happen, and there's great job sort of done by our Tonga National Basketball Association, you know, the president and the board, of trying to make sure that we're able to increase that participation and encourage it, while also, I guess, using our significant diaspora, as a lot of people may know, they're more Tongans overseas than in Tonga itself. So engaging our diaspora, who, you know, a lot of young Tongans, you know, also have played, you know, played the sport overseas. So trying to engage them and hopefully a lot of us from the diaspora will continue to go back and help out and help grow the game.
It was comical almost on Friday night. We were at MSAC watching some games, and like it was almost like a little shopping cart. Like you, like Ciali wandering around, going, "Do you think he's Tongan? Like, do you think is he Samoan? Like, it's you know, is there someone around that we can? Like, what do you think? Do you know much about him?" I'm like, "No, I don't know that kid." Yeah, he might be able to play for us. Hang on, I'll have a look. And you know, going through and trying to find more players. But that's what you genuinely deal with when you're dealing with some of these tournaments, is that you'll have players that are obviously based in your country, but there'll be plenty of others that are not based where you have easy access to them. So it's almost like a family tree. Like you're trying to trace back, who are they, where have they come from, is there any lineage here, will they qualify for us, those types of things. It's something that's actually really difficult to keep track of, because you don't really have, and talking to both of you during the week, you don't really have like that depth chart of,
yeah,
here's our database of players that we can actually go and work with. So it is a difficult spot to be in, but if there are any Tongans out there that are looking to play basketball, let me know. I'll pass you on to Ciali. He will happily recruit you into the program from that point. He'll do a little Instagram stalk, try and find the Tongan flag on the Instagram page and go from there. But it is always interesting to hear what it's like from other people coming into the Victorian basketball scene. I feel like it's we kind of get used to it, I suppose, in terms of the participation, the numbers, how many people are around, those types of things, where it's always interesting to get a fresh perspective for people coming in, I guess. But we'll sort of backtrack a couple of months, though. So we had those six Zoom sessions that were a big part of the whole program to start off with. So the Zoom session, so each of our four HP coaches took a session. Jenny, when she was still here, Zoe, when she was in Coops, and Bestie jumped in. Joel Norton from YouthLed took an S&C component of that, and Meave Gallant from Optimum Nutrition and Training also took a session in there. We'll start with you, Marlene. What from those sessions stood out to you that you've been able to apply to your coaching since going through those?
So after while the program was happening, right, online, there were a couple of forums that really stood up to me. And the first one was the leadership and mindset. You know, not a lot of people talk about that part of the game. Everybody's so focused on the skills, the, you know, getting better at dribbling, passing, but no one really talks about, hey, how do you become a leader on the court, or not even on the court, like how do you become a leader off the court? And then having that mindset, and it's difficult. Everybody talks about, it's easy, just do this and that and you're going to have a good mindset. No, it doesn't. There's things that you have to do to have that kind of mindset, right? And what they like to say, like, whatever your input is going to be your output. So that was one that really stood out to me. And the other one was the strength and conditioning. I think we don't take that seriously. Everybody thinks it's just, as long as I can play this sport and I have the skills, it's good. But no one thinks about the part where, you need to make sure that you're conditioned enough and you're strong enough to take contact. And we do see that when we do go internationally, where we get a little bit or little contacts from the other countries, and it kind of worries us. You know, we're kind of taken off guard because of how strong they hit us. And, you know, that all comes down to your foundation, which comes down to your strength and conditioning. And then lastly would be the recovery and nutrition. Again, another topic not a lot of us talk about, you know, or look into. You know, nobody thinks about, after a hard game, I need to go and do some stretching, some recovery, some light workout, or even the whole, I had a intense practice, but, you know, I think I can go again and do another intense practice, not knowing the limitation of your body and understanding it and being able to make sure that you're able to, you know, prolong your career. And it's not just a one shot, one deal kind of thing, right? So those were the three things that really stood out to me, because there are the three that not a lot of people look into or, you know, like really talk about.
Yeah, it makes sense. What about you, CL?
Yeah, exactly like Marlene, I think the leadership and mindset session was a big one for me that I really liked. Particularly, you know, as I mentioned, just starting out in coaching, looking to transition from sort of player to coach. Some really valuable advice from, you know, the main presenters around trying to do one's best at being where, you know, your feet are, and enjoying the process and journey. And also, like Marlene said initially, with the importance of a network and trying to develop a network or just grow and strengthen an existing network of mentors sort of in coaching. Shout out to our national men's coach Wildeberg. The Tongan basketball team is very kindly taking time sort of every month to have Zoom calls with me and chat things through, and I get to ask all the my annoying questions, which Rob has also been accustomed to now.
These
last 10, 11 days. The leadership and mindset, but also I think the defensive session really stood out as well. As a player, I've always loved defense, but being able to, I think
Jenny Screen took that one.
Yep. Jenny Screen, I really enjoyed that session because I've just started helping out with the coaching at my old high school in Fiji, and we ran some trials, so I was able to sort of use the discussions from that session on defense, but also on had a component of how to conduct trials and what you're looking for to try and help out the head coach at the school to sort of run trials. I think those are two main things that come to mind, and then obviously seeing it here kind of in practice, a lot of the concepts that we discussed on Zoom now has been really awesome.
Yeah, and I mean, you alluded to the fact that seeing it all here, so for the last 10, 11 days, you guys have been doing some Ks around Victoria, to be fair to say. So I think we've racked up just over 3,000 Ks in the 11 days we've been out here. So it's a fair bit of driving around, which is the life of a Victorian parent trying to get their kids to everything as well. It doesn't change, and coach for that matter. But we have been near on everywhere across Victoria over these last couple of weeks. So before we sort of unpack the entire program then and go into sort of what you've taken away from it, a couple of just nods of thanks more than anything else to all the coaches that were very welcome to they could have said no, in all honesty. Every time we hit someone up and said, hey, do you mind if we've got a couple of coaches, do you mind if they come into your session, sit behind your bench, can they come into the rooms beforehand, can they jump in afterwards? Every single one of them just said, yep, absolutely, no problems. They give session plans out, they give out training points, they'd walk over during the training sessions and explain what they're doing, why they're doing it. The coaches and the access they gave was just phenomenal. So we will rattle them off just because I think it's only fair we do thank all of those individually. So from Diamond Valley Eagles, Trevor Lee and Dee Butler did a fantastic job in both a game and a training session. We saw a video scout from the Diamond Valley Men the first night you guys got here and went straight into that, into a training session. And we also caught them the other night playing a game and again, access to the teams before the game and what they would go through there. Ringwood Hawks, Jeremy O'Toole just came and had a chat before his game against Geelong United Supercats on the same night. We were scheduled originally to be able to catch one of the games. It didn't quite work out, unfortunately. But, you know, again, very kind with his time. And the Geelong United Supercats, Matthew Payton and Grant Wallace, again, we sat literally touching distance from their bench. It was fantastic to be able to hear the instruction they were giving, but also hear how they interacted with the coaches within their staff, but the players on their bench was fantastic. Another warning specters, Paul Flynn and Andrew Cutler. We caught a couple of their games, and once again, just really interesting to see how they go about going through things. These are two coaches that have been through our state team programs that are now coaching at that NBL 1 level. So again, some pre-game in there with a little bit of a chat, just some access to their scouting notes and those types of things as to how they would prepare their players before a game. Knox Raiders, Jess May and Matt Nunn, again, training session, pre-game, game right behind the bench, those types of things. Fantastic access for them to be able to open up as best they could. Down at Frankston Blues, Dean Kinsman and Andrew Harms gave us a real insight into what their training sessions would look like and how they would prepare their team for a game during the week. And of course, we can't forget Warren Brown, who jumped in beforehand and went through a whole lot of video analyst work and just showing what he does in that space as the, I want to say the technical assistant coach is probably the right word for it in that space. But again, phenomenal to see that. From Eltham Wildcats, Matt Bongetti and Craig Stratford, again, very kindly opened up in very important games for them as well. Like these were win and you're in type games and gave us access to the change rooms before, during and after the game. So again, massive thanks to them. Bendigo Braves, Mark Alabakoff and Steve Black, once again, just very forthcoming and open about jump on in. It'd be fantastic to hear from you. These types of things was brilliant. Down at Dandenong Rangers, Marcus Cusinato took a couple of his players through a workout, an individual workout that you guys got to have a little bit of access to as well, which was brilliant. Down at Kilsyth Cobras, Mark Watkins and Dustin Van Eyck, who ran their under-12s and under-18 girls through a training session. Both, again, very kind. Access to the session plans, happy to send on notes, all those types of things were fantastic. Out at Keilor Thunder, Dylan Cole, who we caught his VJBL game on Friday night, it was, in an MSAC, but again, had a chat beforehand, let us sit near the bench, interaction, all those types of things was just really interesting to see because we've been watching a lot of senior basketball at that stage, how it translated down to the junior level too. Luke Kendall out at Hoop City that had us come and have a little bit of a look at, one, the facility, which is amazing down there, but also the programs that they're running out of there. Caught a little bit of the Melbourne United practice down there, so big thanks to Dean Vickerman for having us in on that one. And last but not least, Core Advantage and Darren McInnes, who, again, very kindly took us through a presentation as to why strength and conditioning matters. And you've both alluded to it in the Zoom sessions more than anything else, but it was great to talk to him firsthand and see and hear what he does down there. I must admit, it's a little annoying every time I go down to Core Advantage. Like, he gives a presentation and I sit in on the presentation. It's like, yeah, I've got to change some stuff that I've been doing. And I know, speaking to both of you, you've walked out of there and like, oh, I've been doing this wrong for years now that I've heard Durham and talk about why we should do things a certain way. But that's kind of the fun part. Like, the learning behind it is actually where the really good stuff starts. So a massive thank you to all those coaches. We can't thank you enough for supporting the program in that. And like I said, every single one of them, like, didn't even hesitate. It was just like, yep, they're in, no problems. They made you guys feel really welcome, which I appreciate as well, because it's always really strange that you just see a random person sitting in your locker room before a game and it's like, who's this? Like, where have they come from? Like, this is not normally someone that's in our team. And like, there was a couple of the teams that are like, oh, are they the drug testers? Like, we don't want these guys around. Like, this is going to suck for us. But no, just people on a scholarship program, which is a great way to be about it. So a massive thank you to all those clubs out there, because they didn't have to do it, and we certainly couldn't have put this program together without their input. So a big thanks to all the coaches. So as we get into that, it's been a fairly big 10 to 11 days now. What were some of the best things that you saw coaches do during your time? Marlene, we'll start with you. What were some of the best things that you enjoyed from looking at the coaches? That might be on the court, off the court, anywhere in between. Like, what did you really enjoy about it?
Man, there's a lot. I want to start with, like, all the coaches, all the teams we watched, where their intensity was just up there, regardless of the result of the game. They kept playing. They, you know, they kept working hard. Their plays were just, there are things that I saw that, I was just like, wow, I never thought about it that way. The way they handled their pressure, the way they handled any obstacles and any challenges that come up their way, they were just able to find ways to counter it, find an advantage to the disadvantage, right? I liked how some of them, you know, they were patient enough to, let's wait it out, let's see what the other team's going to do. There's some who were just making adjustments on the fly, which, man, that takes a lot, you know, that, coming personally from me as a coach, like, to make adjustments on the fly, it's a lot of mental work. So to see all of that happen in action, it was amazing. And, you know, all the coaches we watched, they're just really good at what they do, and you can really see it from their teams. And I mean, not only the coaches on the court, but also the coaches during practice, you knew that they know what they're doing. They understand their offense and defense so well, and it's just their coaching style. You know, you can pick it up as soon as you watch a practice. And again, shout out to Core Advantage. A lot of the presentation we watched blew my mind, and there are things that I cannot believe I've been doing wrong for several years that I'll definitely be taking back home and be fixing that. That's for sure. And yeah, there's just a lot of things that, you know, I could go on and on and on and on and on, and it will never be done.
Yeah, no, I completely get it. What about you, C. Halley? What were some of the things that you saw coaches do while you were at here?
Yeah, no, there's definitely a long list of things. I was trying to think while at the same time listening to Marlene, of course. I think one thing that has definitely stood out, at least in the last few games, is the kind of incredible ability of some of these coaches to keep things simple, which has been pretty awesome. I tend to, like I've, you know, said in some of our rides in the car, I tend to overcomplicate certain things in my head. But I think the way they're able to, like, communicate so clearly and kind of succinctly, yeah, and get their messages across, and keep, you know, the timeouts, adjustments, everything as simple as possible, because I think as players, particularly in games, you're not going to be able to retain a whole lot of information coming at you. So keeping both your adjustments simple and your messages, you know, pre-game, during game, as well as the game plans itself, like the scouting has been really exciting to see, to be exposed to that. It's kind of felt like at times, you know, we talked about it as well in the car, the that All or Nothing TV series, where you're sort of behind the scenes look into these elite teams. But I guess for us, what's been great is not just seeing the elite teams, but seeing it at you know, from sort of those, I guess we had what, under 12, under 14s, and you know, the academy levels and the development levels as well, all the way through. So I think what I really liked about sort of the development side of things is seeing in place the structures that these clubs like Kilsyth and Knox have for their juniors and those pathways, and that's been really awesome to see. You know, we don't currently necessarily have, you know, those in place, but there's definitely things to take back and to try and get us thinking about how we can, you know, further strengthen and build on the pathways we have, or maybe sort of drawing from, you know, the structures that are in place here, and not just for players, but as we've spoken about, for coaches too, which is great. So I think those are the things. I mean, you know, the Warren at Frankston as well, a bit of a real highlight with his video wizardry, we'll call it, which was awesome. I'm definitely sure nowhere will I ever be able to do that, but I'd love to get into it and try and get started and get the hands dirty a bit, looking at the video side of things and scouting, etc. Yeah, so I think those are some of the main.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I didn't tell you guys either, I got a message from Warren Brown the day after you guys met with him. He's like, "Oh, thanks so much for like letting me talk." It's like, mate, we would have let you go for hours.
Oh, yeah,
like, honestly, like, looking at some of the stuff he does in that space, he's literally world class with what he does. It's
incredible.
It's but just the benefit as well that creates for Frankston and being able to do their scout and prepare. Mm-hmm. And it's not just the scout, but it's also the review. Like, yeah, a big part of what we do as coaches is not necessarily worrying about who we're about to play next. It's also about fixing some of the deficiency that our team may have. at various stages. So that's a big part of it as well, and what you do in that video space, I think, is really important. So what did you guys think about the games and the presentation? So obviously the VJBL, when that runs, it's like in-out chaos. Deliberately took you guys to WEMSAC just because there's usually, you know, 8 to 10 courts of chaos going on in one time, and basketball's going everywhere and all that sort of stuff. But what did you think of the game presentations and like the actual look of the game, I suppose, for the NBL one? Because we saw, I think, 5 or 6 different pre-games and all that sort of stuff. Like, how did it look on your end, Ciali?
It's definitely kind of really entertaining, and I could, you know, easily see, like, sort of, I don't know, just feeling the atmosphere and the great, like, sort of crowd that is there, that is hyped up by sort of all the player intros, and, you know, having the lights dimmed, and, you know, all the music going, and the announcers just doing a great job at hyping things up, even just getting the crowd involved at like half times, doing like shooting contests, or I think we almost saw a half court shot go in.
Yeah, we're pretty close.
Pretty close.
Yeah. For a couple of $1,000, I think, was on the line.
So,
yeah.
Which was a shame. Yeah, it was so close. I think had it been me organizing it, I would have given another shot, but I understand that, yeah, you don't want to be too generous when it comes to those things. I think just the overall presentation was really great, and it creates such a nice atmosphere. You see, like, families out on, like, you know, Friday nights, Saturday nights, also Sunday afternoon just now. Really cool. I like the music as well. Sort of, it's the, what is it, the Star Wars, is it the Death Star?
Yeah, the Imperial March stuff.
Yeah, the opposition comes into that, which I found particularly entertaining and amusing.
When you come from that 3-on-3 background as well, where you're used to music going constantly, like, there's all the DJ and the hype guys and all that sort of stuff around it, so it probably played into that a little bit too, which is, it's entertaining for the kids. Like, I know at the academy session we run on a Saturday morning, we have music going constantly in that thing just to try and get a little bit of a better feel about the sessions, which I think is really valuable. What about you, Marlene? What did you sort of enjoy, like, or what did you think about the games and presentation in general?
Just like Ciali, there's, you know, the intros and everything that players go through, like, that's really nice to do. Like, it, you know, before a game, it pumps you up as a player. Like, if I ever got an intro, I would like to, like, march in there, like, okay, let's go, you know. That was really nice to see, you know, and it's a first timer for me to experience something like that, so I was really impressed. The environment, you know, you can really tell from the stands, the fans, the true fans wearing all their gear and everything in game day, so that was really cool to see. Their support system here for their teams are really great. It's amazing. Like, I was looking around the room and I'm like, wow, there's just a lot of people coming out to support their teams. And regardless if it's the men's team or the women's team, there's just support coming out. So that's really great to see. The games, they were really good to watch. Intensity, I always go back to intensity. It's a whole new level. It's different. And, you know, I enjoyed watching the games. Like, there's sometimes I forget that we're here to observe and scout the game, and I'm here going, oh, man, that was a good play. That was a good pass. And I'm like, oh, wait, I forgot. Okay, let me just write down. So, you know, there are things like I enjoyed watching the games. Enjoyed watching the coaches, the way they interact with their players. You know, you can really tell from how they interact, what kind of coach they are. And that's really cool to see. Players as well, you can really pick out the leaders out of the team who are guiding their teammates, you know, who are the seasoned players, who are the younger ones. You can really tell by each team their dynamics as well. So that was awesome to watch. Definitely there are going to be a couple of stuff that I saw that I'd like to try out and bring back home. So overall, the presentation for me, it's awesome. I enjoyed it.
All right, so we'll talk about it because there were a lot of coaches that did allow access into their locker room for the pregame stuff. So, Ciali, we'll start with you. Like, from the pregames that you saw, what was done in there that you really liked? What are the things that you've probably taken away a little bit that you feel that you could use with your teams that you eventually look at coaching as well? Like, what were some of the things that you really enjoyed?
Yeah, I think definitely, like I sort of mentioned, the scouting side of things. Once again, keeping that sort of scout relatively simple, but at the same time, coaches were great in, so I think players would have received the scout sort of during the week or had a video session. So a lot of the pregame was kind of just reinforcing the scout, but also kind of giving players the space to, you know, come in, because often the players would have seen, you know, the opposition players or have perhaps a better understanding of, you know, what their tendencies are, etc. So that's kind of creating that kind of collaborative vibe, I guess, in the locker room. I think one particularly sort of great moment, I think, that will stand out was a speech that the women's non-awarding sort of coach gave in the locker room prior to their game. Because it was, we were very lucky with the timing to, you know, have been here during the First Nations round. He was able to come back to talking about the values that his team had kind of agreed on at the beginning of the year, coming back to playing, you know, together, playing hard, and not just, you know, playing for the team, but playing for their families and playing for Ngunnawal, and mm-hmm. sort of gave respect and use it as an opportunity to sort of raise that awareness, I think, about the First Nations round, which was particularly just very moving, I think. And I mean, I was ready to play. I mean, it would have taken me a good hour to warm up, but at that point, I kind of, yeah, I think we were both hyped.
I was hyped, yeah. Definitely.
Ready to go.
Yeah, huh? I remember you both walking into the locker room. There was a bit of spring in the step for both of you. Like, it did look like you could probably strap them on if you needed to. But even that, just the awareness of First Nations round and a coach relaying that to their players, I think is a really special moment as well. Like, I think that's something that probably goes a little bit unnoticed by a lot of people out there, because mm-hmm. we don't know what goes on in locker rooms, obviously, and you guys had access to it, which obviously helps sort of see a little bit behind the curtain as to what's going on. What about you, Marlon? Were there any sort of pre-game locker rooms that you jumped into that you really liked?
So just like Siali, the Nuwading pregame was really something for me. It made me want to go and play. You know, he went back to, you know, we're a tribe, we work together, yeah. When we go out there, let's help each other. So that was really like something that stood out to me, and how he brought the team together, reminded us why we played basketball, and then from yeah. there he went on and explained his game plan. So that was something that one of the things that stood out for me. The other one was today with the Braves coach, the Bendigo Braves coach, when the way he kept his pregame meeting so simple, and he just gave them three bullet points to focus on, broke down those bullet points. And I liked how he used different colored markers. So he said to me, I use different marker colors so that the colors will stand out to the players. You know, you don't want to be just bland black up there, and you know, no one remembers that. But if you have it in different colors, it reminds the players, like, hey, this is our goal, this is what we need to do in the game. So that really stood out for me. And the way that he encouraged his players, he reminded them, like, hey, look at this is what the opponent had. This is their percentages and their free throws, percentages and their 3 points, their turnover rates. Like, he put that all down and he said, this is what they're good at, this is what they're not good at, and whatever they're good at, we're going to stop. Whatever they're not good at, we're going to play on that. So that was something that really stood out to me, and I said, wow, I would like to definitely take that back home and start working something around like that.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense. And this is the hard part too. I think we all get really riled up on the whole pregame speech and the motivation sort of thing. And I think there's a part of it where you do need to every now and again to push the button to the players, and it's like, yeah, let's see if we can get some juices going here and get them involved. But there is another part of it too where you also don't want to overhype them. Mm-hmm. And you almost need to bring them back down a little bit at times, because yeah. those arousal levels can just be a little bit too high, and you want to almost ground them yeah. and then just bring them back. It's like, okay, it's great that we're up for this. It's great that the music's going, the lights are going and all this sort of stuff. But remember, here are our three things that we have to get done. And if we can do these three things, well, we give ourselves a chance at winning. There's no guarantees, obviously, but you at least give them a chance. And I think that's the important part, is sometimes players can get in their own head a little bit and they can just mm-hmm. be all up and in for the game and all that sort of stuff. But every now and again, it's just like, yeah, but don't forget, we still need to get stops on defense. We still yeah. need to contest shots on the perimeter. We still need to make the extra pass on offense. Those types of things are still really valuable mm-hmm. to have to highlight throughout. So What did you see anything offensively or defensively that you hadn't seen before, Marlene, that you sort of feel like, hey, this is pretty good. I wouldn't mind exploring this a little bit more when I go home.
So for offense, it'd be the shuffle offense. That was the first time I ever saw it, and it was new to me, and I've never seen that. Coming from home, we usually only use like motions and the different type of motions and triangle offense. But to see that shuffle offense in action was really it gave options in so many levels, and it wasn't just like happening at the same time. It was in stages where you're getting options for every single player. It wasn't just revolving around one player, and it wasn't where you're going to get confused as a player because you know exactly how to run it. So that was something that stood out for me, the shuffle offense. For defense, it would be that 2-3 and 3-2 where the middle person was playing
slider.
Slider defense. That was different for me. I never thought about it that way, but to have your player play the middle player play 1 or 2 and have her move back and forth, basically playing the split line, that was really unique and new to me. And I liked how some of the coaches, they mixed up their offense and defense. Like defense, it would say, okay, we're going to do zone, but we're going to go to a man as soon as the ball swings at a certain like part of the court. So those were the things, like tips and teaching points that I enjoyed.
Yep. We're in the gaze room as it stands, and you've spoken about the shuffle offense. Like you've nailed that one straight away. It's a very Melbourne Tigers offense that's been around here for an eternity. So you've made some people very happy on that one. What about you, Ciali? what did you see sort of offensively and defensively that you like that you might look at exploring a little bit more of?
Yeah, now that you've said that, definitely the shuffle. But no, I would have said that anyway because it's something that did really. Really stand out, particularly going to see the Tigers now as well.
Yep.
Getting to see it at where it's always been practiced and always been drilled, and being able to see them executed at the different sort of age group levels. Mm-hmm. I think some of the motion stuff was really cool as well. I mean, I've seen a variety of sort of motion offenses, but there's certainly little bits and pieces of that maybe that we'll look to take back, but. There was something that the Nunan Wadding coach, sort of the Nunan Wadding men's coach, did off of numerous sort of Iverson curls into downscreen action or downscreen picks, I think it was, which I quite liked. Slider zone as well on defense, and so I think just the variety of presses and traps. That we're able to see within even just one game coaches have at their kind of disposal and players have at their disposal to implement was really impressive. And I guess just like Marlene said, just having sort of the transition from a zone to match up after a certain number of passes, going from zone to man was really cool to see. A lot of the times, I think I know I've seen that stuff before, but maybe, I haven't, thought about it at that, kind of from that perspective, that perspective of a coach as to why one would, look to do that or even the how, right?
Yeah.
How
absolutely.
You begin to then teach that. So a lot of ideas, and I just need to, figure out how potentially we can, What to draw from it.
Ciala's gone through 3 notebooks while he's been here. It's, he's written down everything. Like at one stage, I think he was writing down like the speed limit sign as we were driving down one of the roads. Yeah, like he just did not stop writing the whole time he was here, which is fantastic in itself. But I'll ask you, who was the best player you saw on this trip, Ciala? Like you've seen a lot of teams and a lot of players over this course, but who was some of the best that you saw and what made them good in that space?
I'm going to say... I mean, the two that really sort of stand out, and this is, I think we got to see her twice, is Kelly Wilson
from
Bendigo, who was just an incredible sort of floor general and sort of was able to dissect the defense, play with pace at different stages, got her teammates involved, always made the right pass, very few turnovers, and then kind of got hers or got shots when she needed to, really. So she was like, it was, yeah, just awesome just to watch her and the, I guess, the speed and the pace and the poise at which she plays. And then the other one that comes to mind was actually, I think it was our first night, and it was another women's game, and it was the Supercats, the Geelong, and it was Ella T.
Yep.
So Samoan female player who was awesome, really warm. I think she thought I was Maori to start off with, so you know, we managed to talk a bit, and you know, being from Tonga and Samoa didn't hurt our conversation, which was great. And just her, you know, sort of nose for the ball and her hard nose play. I think she took a couple of knocks in that game actually and came out and had to change jersey because she'd got blood on it and stuff. But just her overall sort of hustle and IQ and rebounding, yeah, I really loved. So yeah, shout out to Ella T.
Excellent. Marlene, what about yours? Who were your favourite players to watch and what made them good in your eyes?
Well, me and Ciali can have the same opinion. Definitely. It would be Kelly Wilson. Her IQ on the floor is just, it spreads the floor. Watching her and being courtside with her, it gave me a different perspective on, you know, not only how good she is, you know, watching her, but being, you can see that she is a leader on the court. Because when we were on, when they had a timeout, she was guiding her players like, hey, this is what we need to do. Like, you know, like she's also communicating to the coach, like things that aren't working and things that are working. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, you know, again, you know, if you have a point guard who can spread the floor, and she basically magneted a lot of players to come out, which gave a lot of opportunities for her teammates to get open. And on top of that, you know, it's her passing skills are just, I don't know how she does it, like from the baseline. Okay,
we haven't known for years, to be honest.
But to the other baseline, I'm just like, how, you know? And you, like, her teammate isn't even sure that they're going to get a pass, but they're just like, oh, the ball is here. So that's something that really, like, stood out to me. So, yeah, she would be one of the players that really stood out to me overall, yeah.
I'll ask you both a question. Do you think that level of IQ can be taught, or do you think it's just something that the players have and it's just a natural thing? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think there's a level of IQ that definitely can be taught, and mm-hmm. that's for sure. Otherwise, you know, you wouldn't be able to, you know, get very smart, yeah. sort of, and develop players that can, you know, sort of read and react to certain situations. So I'm definitely in the belief that one can help foster and build that IQ. I do think there are definitely certain players and certain people that are just kind of very gifted and they have that innate, you know, vision and IQ already. So maybe there's some that are in a league of their own and kind of potentially will always be, but I do think that for others, you definitely can, you know,
yep.
try and develop
that. Develop
it as well.
That what you can. Yeah. Yep. What about you, Marlene?
So for me, I think IQ it comes down to as well as your experience. So if a player wants to really build their IQ, then they have to really put themselves out there and experience as much as they can. And experience can't just only be games. You also got to be able to understand the game at every single level. When I started coaching, I got another understanding of the game. And with that, you know, that helped me as a player become better. And now I'm moving forward to even trying to learn the rules. Like, if you even understand how the rules go, that's another level of your IQ. If you understand where a ref stands, you can manipulate certain parts of the games, right? So I think IQ, yes, there are people who are just talented on it, and then there are just people who really, if you really put in the work, I say you can build your IQ at a level where you can go above and beyond. I mean, there's a saying that says, like, right, no matter how talented you are, if you don't work hard and it's just talent, it will fade, versus someone who is talented and works on it, then they become better on their IQ. So IQ, it's built I'd say it's built through experience, and it's also in the person is how they are willing to go forth with it and how they're going to use it.
What do you both think, and again, I didn't tell you I was asking this question beforehand, so I apologize. If you need to take a beat, don't stress. The level of communication from the coaches, so how they would communicate with both their coaches but also the players during games, because we were literally right there for timeouts. Like we sat behind the bench, like every now and again, you sort of feel like you're in the game. We were that close to it, which was fantastic. But what did you think about the level of communication and also the different styles of communication? Because like we saw coaches that were up and you know, pretty calm. We saw coaches that were down and obviously a little bit more animated with how they would do things. Was there anything that you saw that you really liked, and like how would you implement that with your coaching, I suppose? So we'll ask you first, Marlene, with this. Like, what did you see communication-wise that you feel like would help the players that you're coaching?
So watching today's game with the Bendigo Braves, the coach was really calm. And when he was so calm, it also made his players calm. They were calm, collective, and they stayed as a unit. So regardless, at one point they went down a point, and instead of getting frustrated, he called a timeout, gathered his team, and then all he went back is, hey, remember, this is what we've talked about. And it's like it clicked. They went back on the court, they ran the play, and I was just like, wow, that was a whole new perspective, right? That, you know, he was calm, collective. So that was something I would take back as a coach, like being calm, and you're able, I guess when you're calm, you're able to see the court at a different perspective, right? And regardless of how, you know, in the referee side, they weren't getting favor calls, instead of him getting mad at the refs, he would talk to them and ask them why he questioned them, where it was a question of professionally. He didn't yell at them and say, explain it, blah, 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 blah. He was just like, he stood right next to the referees and asked them, so can you explain this to me? And then when he got a better understanding, he was able to relay it to his players and say, hey, you know, it's this is what happened. That's why they called that. So that was something that I said was really, really I liked it. I was like, yep. Wow, okay, being calm and collected. And we've seen from our past games, like if a coach got rattled, it rattled the team as well, mm-hmm. where – the players would also feel the pressure, because their coach is feeling the pressure. So for him to able to remove that, you know, I mean, they're undefeated, so everybody's out to get them, and he was able to still not. I didn't feel pressured when I was on the bench with them. I felt really calm and just relaxed while he was coaching and watching his players as well. They were calm and relaxed, like regardless of what was going on in the court.
Yep. Makes sense. What about you, Ali? What do you think of the coach communication during games, before, after, and all those sorts of things?
Yeah, I thought it. Yeah, I particularly like just very similar to Marlene, sort of the coaches that we're able to see that, you know, were very calm and collected. There were definitely sometimes where coaches, you know, needed to get a bit animated. So when they did need to get animated, they did, which is great. I think what really stood out to me was how the coaches sort of used their other coaches and their assistant coaches, whether it be the assistant coaches sort of taking particular stats that were based on the goals that the team had. So if they needed to hold like the opposition to two offensive boards in the quarter, you know, they were tracking that to kind of then sort of reinforce maybe at halftime or after the quarter what the team needed to do. So getting that information from their assistant coaches and sort of just, there were quite a few coaches that I noticed that prior to the timeout would actually just take, so they'd call the timeout, players would go to the bench, and the head coaches would consult briefly with the assistant coaches mm-hmm. to probably ask. And I asked a few, you know, what are you discussing? Not right there on the spot, but after. I wasn't that much of a nuisance. They would say, well, often they would ask their assistant coaches to come with maybe, you know, three specific things that they're seeing that maybe the head coach hasn't thought mm-hmm. of for them to consider maybe. Changes they can make potentially. So I thought that was really good. I think that collaborative effort, I think, goes a long way. At least that's what I believe in. So kind of was in line with how I'd like to, you know, potentially coach myself. And also what really stood out were the coaches that had that two-way sort of communication and the listening to the players. And so listening to players, what was great, like a lot of the coaches, because we were at the end of the season, so they kind of were listening to their players and understanding the context behind the players' seasons and the need to manage bodies for practices. And so maybe, you know, to sort of adjust and plan their sessions accordingly. So it's kind of putting the players, you know, players first in many respects and listening to them. And, and but then also putting the foot down when,
when it was required. It's amazing how many sessions we walked into when they and the coaches say, hey, it's a light session today. We've just had a doubleheader weekend, or we've got a doubleheader weekend that's coming up. This is going to be like, sorry, there's not going to be a lot of teaching or adjustments. This is just going to be get up and down, turn the legs over, some shooting stuff. We're going to discuss scout, and then we're out of here. Like it's and it's great to see, because I think pretty much every game we sat behind the bench on, there was an interaction where if the coach wasn't asking the player was certainly telling the coach. And I don't think I ever saw one of those coaches say, hey, you know, be quiet. You know, that, like they were all very receptive to what was going on, which is a testament to all of them, because this time of year, obviously there are some teams that are battling for a finals berth, but there were just as many that were out of playoff contention completely. And it's like, well, how do you get motivated for this? What are you trying to do in this space too? Which becomes it's a challenge in itself. It'd be fair to say. So, I mean, as we're starting to sort of wrap this up, how do you plan on sharing the knowledge you've gained in this trip? So, obviously, over 40 people applied for these scholarships, and you were the two that were selected for it. How do you plan on sharing the knowledge you've got out of this with other coaches, both within your federation and within the region? Like Marlene, what are your sort of thoughts on that?
So as much as I want to teach everything that I learned, I definitely got to be strategic on how I present all the information that I just accumulated. So right now, since I am coaching the U17 for our juniors back home, I definitely have to reevaluate my offense and how to sharpen that and create my coaching style around it using what I just accumulated. And it's not going to be a whole revamp of what I already taught them, because it's too, I would say we're too deep into the season to be doing that, but definitely going to be taking certain offense ideas and learning, trying to think of a way to manipulate it in my teams and some of the defense stuff that they were running. I want to learn, you know, take some of those and put it back into our team and see how that goes the long way, right? And then I also want to look into with the coaching pathway, how can we structure that with back home, and, you know, building a legacy where it's not just a 1, 2, 3 coach. It's like we have multiple coaches that will be able to step up when needed to. So that's something I'll be definitely looking into as well, with the infos that I got for the past couple of weeks. And, you know, I also want to work into our players, like having them understand that this is more than just, you know, a game, and having them, like, basketball, don't make it your life, have a other life too outside. And those are just like stuff that I notice, like, all the players are doing here. You know, their life doesn't revolve on just the sport. They're doing other things, and that basically helps you with your mental health stuff, right? So those will be something that we will definitely be taking back home. The diaries that, you know, that you were doing at one of your training session, I never thought about it. And, you know, I've been thinking about, like, how do I get feedback from my players without having to end practice like 10 minutes earlier, just so we can go in a circle and talk about our, like, what we liked and didn't like. The fact that, you know, I could do it in another way. I never thought about it that way, but getting that perspective out here, now I know that I'm going to be doing that moving forward. And not only my player's perspective, as well as my own, you know, perspective, my evaluation for myself, because sometimes, you know, when you're coaching, you tend to forget what's going on. So being able to do an evaluation and look back at it and be like, oh, wow, I was a different person 3 months ago versus now, right? So that's definitely something that I want to start to implement on for myself and for my future program that I'll be holding. Definitely what Darren taught us, the D stands, not picking up your feet and hopping. That's definitely something I'm going to teach my players. Like, hey, we're going to do this the right way so that we can get on defense correctly. So that's definitely something I'm going to be implementing moving forward.
Sialy, what about you? Other than obviously the core advantage work that that you're going to be doing down there now.
Definitely the core advantage stuff, big time. And then you know, the warm ups, sort of sharing that resource that they have, which is great. It's incredible what they've the sort of warm up 2.0, I think they call it, that they've developed to basically help. It's very basketball specific, which helps to kind of, I guess, bulletproof to a certain extent players and helps with sort of, you know, mobility and strength at the same time. And to, I guess, with an idea to build up some resilience, so yeah, definitely that. I think, like, first off, we'll, you know, go back to helping out at my old high school. So we'll need to, I've got a few ideas on potential drills to work into practice plans and those things. Maybe some ideas of around sort of style of play and little tweaks potentially that can be made to existing sort of offensive systems that are there. But that's a discussion we'll need to have with the head coach. So yeah, we'll see. I mean, that. As well as sort of sharing that information with, you know, Tonga Basketball. And we have, shout out, of course, to Tonga Basketball. We mentioned it sort of earlier. I think our Instagram account is Tonga Basketball. So follow us, you know, send us a message if you're a Tongan player out there.
And if you're a uniform supplier, let them know as well.
Uniform supplier. We appreciate the, you know, the support we can get. And we're on the rise. So hit us up. after that shameless plug, I think the depth chart, stuff, like, not just for players, but developing one for coaches as well, in Tonga, and then hoping through sort of the identification and, the putting in place of a depth chart, then sharing the information that we get that way, like, whether it's through sort of just, potentially, coaching clinic in Tonga, or just, you know, through the existing federation and all the work that they're doing as well. I mean, everything will, you know, will be done looking to kind of build on what's, you know, what's already there, and the work that's been, all the hard and great work that's being done on the ground. I think those are a few of the ideas, but my problem is going to be trying to distill my three notebooks into something coherent that
what the plane ride's for.
It's simple. Yeah.
No, that makes a lot of sense. It's you know, and it was fantastic having you guys out here, but I'm curious about this. What do you, like, based on everything you've seen here, what are the big, I'll say, one point that you believe makes a great coach? Like, what is the one thing that if you could, you know, get that through to coaches out there that you believe will make you a great coach, what do you think it is, Sialy?
One point, I would think sort of that emotional intelligence, sort of being able to sort of, understand players and being willing to listen and adapt one's thinking, you know, potentially to the players that you have, your ability to sort of communicate with them and get a message across, get that buy-in. And I think a lot of that, you know, can be helped out, from sort of looking to strengthens one's ability to put oneself in the place of the players, and understand them a bit more. So I think emotional intelligence, if that, that's pretty broad, I know. But you asked for
specific.
One.
Specific. No. It's bang on the money. I'm okay with broad. Like, if I only give you one, be as broad as you possibly can. Like, get as much stuff in there as you could. Yeah. What about you, Marlon? What do you sort of believe makes a great coach?
Man, Ciali took my answer.
There's nothing wrong with that.
I've been taking your answers after you said them. Well, so it's my tender.
I think for me, it'd be being a good communicator. If you're able to communicate clearly to your players, then they'll be able to, do what they're being told. If you're not able to communicate something clearly to them, whether that's on the court or off the court, then that player would have walked away confused or walked away frustrated than they already are. So being a good communicator would be something as a coach I would definitely recommend something that we would all need to work on. Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. So that does wrap us up. So firstly, appreciate to both of you for jumping into this and taking in good spirits. I know podcasts are never easy to do, but also the whole 2 weeks in itself, it's been fantastic that – it's a Marty Hansen scholarship, and I think he'd be very proud of the work you've both put in to what's coming. And I know I've been busting your asses constantly. Hey, have you done your diaries? 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 And I'm like, yes, Rob, we've done the diaries. Oh, I'm a day behind. Like, I'll get on that. Those types of things. It's been fantastic, the amount of work you put in. Massive thanks, of course, to the coaches that have allowed access once again. But also a big thanks to Annie LaFleur for putting this program together on the feed brand. So she's been a big help, and obviously Peter Topfer, who jumped in for those first couple of sessions as well. So big appreciation, shout out to all those guys for helping it out. Good luck with your coaching. Like, it's certainly one of those things that you never really know where it would get you. I'm sure at the start of the year you didn't anticipate being in freezing cold Melbourne dealing with stadiums. Like, hey, Rob, is this one heated? No, it's not. Bring the extra jumper. Like, it's those types of things. But you guys have handled it really well. Like, it was super ambitious of Marlene when she jumped off the plane the first day in, like, shorts and a T-shirt.
No,
like,
I don't have that resilience.
I shot myself on the foot that day. I walked out of the airport and I said, it's not cold. It's not cold ahead.
Just keep telling yourself that. It's freezing
it's
cold.
All
but
ahead.
But it's one of those things that is really difficult to do. But you guys have handled everything really well. And I'm sure you won't miss my ridiculous questions. And, what would you do here? And what have they called this time out? What would this coach be saying? Those types of things as well as, what do you guys want for dinner? Are you guys hungry? Like, you're not going to miss that one. You can go home and just have whatever you want to have. It's been a couple of weeks of takeaway, sadly enough. But thank you both for jumping into it. It's certainly appreciated. Listeners, Tonga Basketball on Instagram, that's the one.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, this show is only here for shameless plugs, nothing else. So it's but thank you both for your time. Is there an Instagram account for the Northern Mariana Islands?
Yes, we do. It's NMI Basketball. So just like Ciali here, if you're from the NMI, reach out.
Excellent. Coaches, thanks very much for listening, and we will chat to you all next week on the Talking Sweet podcast. Look, tune in, enjoy the tribe.